Hello, hello. Welcome to Squabbles of the Soil, Season 4, a podcast produced in collaboration with MTSU Collegiate FFA Chapter and directed by students of the MTSU Debate and Discussions in Agriculture class. The opinions stated on this podcast are not affiliated with MTSU. The dirt of the day here consists of controversial agricultural topics. Let's come down to earth.
Hello, my name is Jasmine Angel. I am an animal science major with a minor in secondary education at Middle Tennessee State University. Today's topic is going to be about fish farming. Fish farming is the breeding, raising, and harvesting of fish. It is a form of aquaculture and the fastest growing area of animal food production today. As we continue to navigate these waters, we will dive into the potential positives and negatives of this form of agriculture. Our first guest today is Mr. Stephen Hedlund from the Global Seafood Alliance. Thank you for joining us for today's podcast. I'm super excited to talk to you about this topic. Why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Jasmine. Thank you. I'm Steve Hedlund. I'm with the Global Seafood Alliance, and I'm responsible for the nonprofit organization's media, events, communications, public affairs, and crisis management. Sort of anything to do with communications. So we're a nonprofit trade association with media and events, but also with a third party aquaculture certification program that's been around for almost 20 years now. It's called Best Aquaculture Practices. That's probably what we're best known for, or what a consumer or the public may recognizes for, because it's an eco label that you can find on packaging in supermarkets and restaurants around the world.
All right, that's awesome. Thank you. Can you give us a little background knowledge? Like what is fish farming? What is aquaculture?
Yeah, so that would encompass pretty much the farming of any aquatic animal. It could be finfish, it could be shellfish, it could be a cephalopod, it could be pretty much, it could even be seaweed or kelp is considered aquaculture. And there are so many different species that are farm-raised around the world. And there are so many different production methods too, from farming in ponds, on land, to farming in nets or cages offshore, to indoor recirculating aquaculture systems, to methods of growing mollusks like oysters in cages just offshore, or mussels on ropes just offshore. It's pretty dynamic in terms of the number of species and the number of production methods involved in aquaculture. There's a lot. There's a lot involved.
There's a lot that goes into it. Yes, sir. Do you think that indoor aquaculture, is that like more of a cost thing? Does it cost more than like, say, if you have like nets and stuff off of the coast?
Yeah, so that's exactly it. You're right. So the cost of production is higher.
Gotcha.
And the technology is newer, so we're just beginning to see those types of systems come online.
Okay.
But the benefit is it's closer to market. So if you think you're raising Atlantic salmon in Norway or Chile or Canada, and it's fresh and it's put on a plane and flown to the United States, where then it's trucked to its destination. The benefit with indoor RAS facilities is that they're closer to market. So the product, the carbon footprint on the product in terms of transportation is less. It has its advantages and disadvantages, and it's relatively new. So those entrepreneurs are kind of still figuring out costs and trying to get costs down. Just because there's more control in an indoor closed system,
you're still prone to things that farming seafood in open air is prone to, whether it's, you know, it has to be managed properly. Disease is always an issue with raising any type of animal, whether aquatic or terrestrial. So there are challenges no matter what, but just depending on the production method, it's sort of a different set of challenges.
So, I gotcha.
So a lot of our seafood comes from overseas.
Awesome. When it comes to aquaculture in general, mm-hmm. I know there's some issues surrounding, I guess, waste management and how that affects the environment. Can you talk a little bit about how the farming industry of aquaculture, how it affects the environment?
Yeah. So all the things that go along with animals congregating in one area, whether on land or on water, certain things like effluent need to be properly managed. And that's where standards like ours, like I had mentioned earlier, our Best Aquaculture Practices program. So that comes with certain requirements that that effluent be managed in a certain way. I mean, that's just one environmental factor. Another is like proper siting, ensuring that there's enough that area where the farm is placed, the capacity is there to handle the additional fish, from effluent to water quality to everything. Those things need to be carefully monitored. Every responsible fish farm carefully monitors those things, effluent, water quality. They also affect the health of the animal too. If you're not doing things correctly from an environmental perspective, you're not only affecting the ecosystem around you, but your fish are going to do well, and they can get sick. So it's really important to ensure that proper stocking density, proper water quality, all these things are at a spot where the fish will thrive. And again, because this is such an investment, farms can't afford to not ensure that all of this is lined up, because they're not gonna, it's just not gonna result in, things aren't gonna go well.
Right.
If you don't have your ducks in a row. Yeah. Really not that far off from terrestrial. It's a newer industry. It's not as old as terrestrial animal agriculture is, but the factors are still the same. I mean, animals need to be taken care of. They can get sick just like us. So
right.
that needs to be monitored properly. So
you think there's more waste and stuff that affects the environment from like offshore farms versus like the indoor facilities, or is it about the same?
So when you're offshore and it's properly sited, there's usually enough of a kind of current coming in and out. And that's why I said earlier siting is so important, because if there isn't enough of a current coming in and out, then that'll affect the seabed so with indoor there's more control, but there's still effluent management and water quality management. So you can have systems that control it, but you still have to, the water's coming through, you're taking water from say a nearby estuary or bay, you're pulling it in for the fish, and then you're treating it and it's going back out. So you're still, yes, there's more control over the environment because it's indoors, but you still have to manage it very, very carefully, because you got to ensure that what's being put back out has been treated and is clean.
Right.
And with an offshore system, say an Atlantic salmon pen that's a mile offshore, you're kind of getting that naturally. The water is kind of flowing in and out, and it's in a place that's protected, not so much in the open ocean. That's why you see a lot of these types of pens, like in areas that are with a jagged coastline where it's protection from the elements, but with enough of a water flowing in and out to keep the area clean. So,
gotcha.
And it's the same with moss, with filter feeders, and where those oyster beds are or mussel ropes are. It's, they're filter feeders, so you need mm-hmm. to ensure that there's enough of a water flow coming in and out so they're getting the nutrients that they need. So that's what they're eating. You're not feeding those animals like you would feed. That's the other thing. You got to make sure feeding, if you don't have to feed an oyster, a clam, or a mussel.
Right.
Because they're taking the nutrients out of the water, but you do with shrimp or salmon, you need to feed them pellets, just like you would feed a pet, right? So, you know, ensuring that their diet matches what they would get in the wild, that they're getting the nutrients that they need, and that you're not overfeeding them, and that not too much feed is building up on the seafloor is important too, because that can affect the environment too if your fish aren't eating the majority of the feed that they're fed. So
gotcha.
It's complicated. Yeah. It's pretty complicated. I'm not a scientist, I'm not a biologist, but I understand how it all works. And a lot goes into it.
Is definitely, I like you said, a newer industry. I feel like this is the first time I really kind of dove deep into kind of researching a little bit about it. It's not really talked about, which is one of the reasons why I thought this would be a good topic to have.
People still, you know, they don't, you know, it's easy for most of us to think of a farm with cattle or pigs or chickens, but a lot of people haven't seen some of these types of farms up close because they happen in rural areas. I'm up here in Maine, and a lot of people in Maine haven't seen a salmon farm up close. They don't even really know what it's like unless they go on the internet and look for one.
Yeah.
So they're not taking it in every day. And then you go to other parts of the country where aquaculture isn't prevalent. They just don't see this. Whereas you may drive by a farm, you know, a terrestrial farm on your way to work, and they understand what that is. So it's definitely the industry. Our industry needs to do a better job educating consumers and the public for what we're all about, which is complicated because there's so many different species and so many different production methods, so it gets complicated. But people get, if they don't know what it is, and they may not consume that product. So it's up to us as an industry to kind of educate them on what our products are all about, how they're raised, how it's beneficial to the environment, what it does in rural areas where there's not a lot of job opportunities. It's great, and you know, it is food production at the end of the day. It's a good industry to be in, so there are a lot of benefits to it. A lot of people don't understand it, so they can get freaked out. But usually, when you explain it to them, they understand what it's all about.
Right. Do you think fish farming has helped combat like overfishing and stuff?
I used to think that, but I don't really think that anymore. Aquaculture, I wouldn't say it's, I think because so many fisheries these days, and not every fishery certainly, are really well managed, and some are so well managed that they're certified as sustainable or responsible. Aquaculture doesn't necessarily relieve that because they're already responsibly managed or sustainably managed. I think it's more the opportunity to grow supply, and that the two kind of supplement each other, and one may open up a market for another. And I mean, if you look at something like Alaska salmon, which is, you know, is plentiful and Alaska, but it's only available at certain times a year, and you're kind of limited in what you can do. You know, with farm salmon, it, you know, that can really open up markets because it's a product that's really consistent and it's available year round, and the price is relatively consistent. So the two kind of complement each other and help grow that particular category when some of it's farmed and some of it's wild. So I would say it's more complementary or supplemental than aquaculture relieving pressure off wild capture fisheries. It's funny, I used to think that, and recently I came around to, no, that's not really the case. It's more about aquaculture's ability to grow seafood supply
right
globally.
Awesome. Well, that's all the questions I have for you today, sir. I really appreciate you
Yeah,
talking
my
to
pleasure.
me and getting on here and hopefully educating some more folks out there. So I really appreciate that. Enjoyed talking to you.
Right, same here. Thank you,
Thank
Jasmine.
you. All right, so we're gonna go ahead and move to our second guest on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. I'm super excited to talk to you and hear things from your point of view. I'll let you go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
CM Stjelichan Stjelicha CM Chiokden Sinisnatulate and at Quisenich OCM, what they call Vancouver Island, what they call Canada, and what they call British Columbia. This one of my tribe is Wasanich Nation tribal member. My name is Chiokden. That is who I am. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. So, like I said earlier, I saw where you had posted about the state of Washington banning net pen fish farming. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Kind of explain what kind of went on?
Yeah, we worked to kick those things out. We are protectors of the Salish Sea, occupied the Olympia State Capitol three different times for various reasons, and one of the reasons is to protect our wild salmon, our salmon people, because we are salmon people. We're saltwater people, salmon people. The salmon nations are the sacred beings that we've always worked with and depended upon, and the fish farms are basically genocide. They hold five European viruses, and like in so-called British Columbia, and there were nearly 100 those so-called fish farms in there, and penned up Alaska. I'm sorry, they're Atlantic salmon. They called them not really salmon, I don't think. But they had many of them penned up there, and just a viral spawn, basically. Barely even any salmon would make it through there. Our salmon would return and go through that viral spawn, and they would just kill them. They'd find them up in the rivers, just dead by the hundreds, without laying any eggs, without spawning at all, and the virus has killed them. So we know that those penned fish our genocide for our people, our first peoples here, and they're also genocide for those wild salmon people. So they finally solidified that after those we did kick out those fish farms. It was Cook Aquaculture, and we interrupted one of their meetings after that. It was a number of years ago. It took this long, I believe, for them to finally get the law into place. But after Cook had agreed to, not have any of these so-called Atlantic salmon in our waters here in what they call Washington State, they started talking about other things, and somebody informed us that they were going to be meeting with Washington University of Washington there, and we went in and disrupted them, and they were talking about taking our wild salmon and putting them behind inside of pens. It's insane. And I asked them, why are you even talking about doing this? You guys are the ones who completely annihilated the food sources of our people to genocide us, and now you're in this, and it's a place of higher education, and you're in here talking about further genocide of our first peoples and the wild salmon. You guys really need to check yourself, I told them. You shouldn't even be talking about any type of aquaculture at all. If you're going to talk about anything about increasing food and fish and salmon, you need to restore the forests that your ancestors sawed to the ground 98 0.2% of every tree that was part of a forest here in our South Sea, your ancestors annihilated. And now where does salmon live? The salmon doesn't live in the sea or the ocean. The salmon lives in an ancient forest, and you killed the ancient forest, so therefore you wiped out wild salmon. And it's 2 to 5% remaining pre-contact levels. And I told him, you guys are insane. This is criminal. And there's no way you're going to pen up our wild salmon. There's no way any of our First Peoples are going to let you do that. You know, and it was infuriating to hear them actually say, oh, since they won't let us pen up those diseased, nasty, non-salmon-like beings that we have to dump antibiotics in their food like mad, and it doesn't even help. They're still lice-ridden, 5 viral diseases. We're going to pen up your wild salmon now and do that same thing to them. You know, it's like, you will not do that. Absolutely not. And since that day, I talked to a friend of mine. He said, you know what? You changed that whole department. You and Chulalongkorn, you guys went in there and you stood up for your culture and, you know, for these lands. And the young students, like, it was all a bunch of staunchy old, like, professors before you guys got there. And now it's completely changed around. They're talking about totally different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, much more like what we talked about. So, I mean, you know, we do make a difference when we stand up, you know, and we got to stand up for these sacred beings that we always stood for. Always could make decisions for them. We've made decisions for them for tens of thousands of years here. Co-created paradox. So we need to do it again. Colonialism has to get off its arrogant, you know, high horse and start listening to us. They don't have the answers, and we do. Now, sure, they can come up with some answers, but sometimes they're like what I'm talking about. They make things worse. So,
Do you think maybe getting it out there more, telling more people about what's going on, kind of spreading the word, that would help have a positive effect on everything going on?
Absolutely, yes. We do need to be informed. Education, it's all about education, and the more we understand about the ways of our people and the insanity of colonialism, and the idea that we could, we'd be okay with things like what they're doing, these GMO toxic non-salmon beings wiping out our wild salmon, you know, stocks. People need to know, you know, we need to ask every time we go to a restaurant, is this wild salmon? Is it farm salmon of any form at all? Or is this completely wild? And if it's farmed, you need to say, I need to talk to your manager. And you need to explain the things that you've learned to them so that they are now educated. And they know that you know, and they know that you are not going to stand by and let them genocide our indigenous people any further. And you're not going to let them genocide the salmon people, the salmon nations. And when you do that, you know, then everybody starts listening. So
right.
We just start at the grassroots and move forward.
Right.
The best we can do, right?
Absolutely. It's really nice to talk to someone from and see a different perspective of things, that this is something that... Like you said, it needs to be talked about more. Is there anything else you would like to say?
I want to thank you for doing the work. Thank you for educating people.
Thank you.
That's what our old people told us. They said, we're all learners, and we're all teachers. And so even a child has something to teach us, you know, even a baby, you know. And we need to listen to each other. We need to speak out. Stand up and let people know today's the day to work with our first peoples, our indigenous people, and stop colonizing us, stop genociding us. And, you know, because the genocide has never ended here on what we call Turtle Island. It just hasn't. You name one thing that kills you, and our people are at the top of the list. And so when we make these choices, when you stand up for Mother Earth, you know, you're standing up for our people, but you're also standing up for your own children. You're standing up for your own existence, because we're a part of Mother Earth. And that's, you know, we've lived unseparated from our Mother Earth here as Coast Salish people in tens of thousands of years. And, you know, colonialism has removed us from these food sources. Every day they remove us as they develop the land. They put up a strip mall. You know, where are we going to get our food? How are we going to live as the Creator intended us to live? So remember, your action has a reaction, and consider doing the right thing for our first peoples and your own children, because when you do that, you stand up. You know, you stand up for Mother Earth, but you stand up for our people, and you're standing up for the future, a livable future for all children on Mother Earth, and as well as the sacred beings the Creator put here. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I'm the founder of Protectors of the Salish Sea. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. We're an Indigenous-led organization who continue to stand up for our Indigenous rights to live close to Mother Earth and have these foods and medicines be there for us, and a bright future for our children and all children. So, yeah, thank you for having me here. Haiska Siam. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on another insightful episode of Squabbles of the Soil. We hope you've enjoyed digging deep into the pressing issues facing our agricultural world. Keep listening and find out who you are rooting for.